What's up, St. Louis? It's your host, Luke Farrell of the STL Bucket List Show. The STL Bucket List Show is driven by Bomarito Automotive Group. Bomarito is Missouri's number one car dealership with over 20 locations, so I guarantee that there's one in your neighborhood. Since the 1970s, Bomarito has sold over 1 million cars, and John and the entire team made us feel completely comfortable when we picked up our new vehicle recently for the family. So I can't thank the Bomarito team enough for driving this episode forward, and enjoy the show. What's up, St. Louis? It's Luke with the STL Bucket List Show. Just wrapped up an episode with Marcus Seidel of 2.0 Training Systems. We hope you guys enjoy it. For 50 years, Bankhead and Firth Orthodontics has been proudly serving the vibrant St. Louis community. As a family-owned and operated practice since day one, the commitment to excellence and personalized care runs deep. They believe in giving back to the wonderful people of St. Louis who have entrusted them with their smiles. Step into the five locations across St. Louis with modern offices equipped with the latest orthodontic technology. Their three amazing doctors are dedicated to providing top-notch, innovative treatments tailored just for you. Join us in celebrating 50 years with Bankhead and Firth Orthodontics, where your family becomes a part of theirs. Schedule your free consultation today and let them help you achieve the confident, gorgeous smile that you deserve. Because in St. Louis, your smile is your legacy.
If you want to hear about St. Louis, tune into the Bucket List Show weekly. Hear what Marissa and Luke say. It drops every Wednesday. Got a dope new guest every single week. Buckle up for the ride. Who's it gonna be? Who's on the show today? They rep St. Louis. What to do in the loo on a late night, or maybe what to do on a date night? Yeah, Bucket List has you covered. They know what's going on, what's going on. They'll give you, hey, 18 different things to do, or 19 if you need one more to choose. Yeah, this city is a place we call home, a place we call home. Yeah.
What's up, St. Louis? It's your host, Luke Farrell of the STL Bucket List Show. We're back with another new episode this week, but I just want to shout out all of our incredible sponsors, but more importantly, the people that tune in and listen each week. We've been supporting the people, places, and events that make St. Louis special, and we couldn't do that without you guys. And of course, our sponsors, starting with Bomarito Automotive Group, Four Hands Brewing Company. We got some new citywide lights in the studio today. Might crack some open later. Our friends over at the Regional Arts Commission of St. Louis, new sponsors to Covis Western Boots, and of course, St. Louis Closet Company. So thank you guys for sponsoring the show, and as well as Bankhead Firth Orthodontics. So we're going to get right into it, though. I got a special guest, probably our biggest guest we've had in the studio as far as size goes. Dude is a freaking bodybuilder. We got Marcus Seidel. Thank you for joining us today, my guy.
Thank you for having me, man. Glad to be here.
I got to come visit your gym, 2.0 Training. We got to shoot some video. I want to read a little excerpt from your guys' website, and then let's talk about it a little bit. So basically, it's in your own words. It's welcome to 2.0 Training. You guys are a fitness center located in Webster Groves, Missouri, private training center committed to helping you reach your fitness goals and maintain a healthy lifestyle by helping you feel comfortable in the gym. The coaches there are here to provide necessary equipment and motivation to make you fall in love with your routine. What does that mean to you?
I mean, it's everything, man. Like in this industry, there's a big component of intimidation for a lot of people, like when it comes to personal training or just the whole gym experience as a whole. Mm-hmm. And so we have a private center. So there's no, we don't do memberships. So if you hire myself or Katie or any of the trainers that we eventually bring on in the future, you're going to get a one-on-one experience. You're not going to have a bunch of other people in the gym around you to kind of prevent from that intimidation taking place. Mm-hmm. And I think that's huge for people because, I mean, if you talk to anybody who's just kind of a casual gym goer or someone who just knows that they need to get in better shape to be healthier or look better, whatever it is, the number one hurdle for them is going to the gym and being surrounded by a bunch of strangers and feeling judged and that whole thing. And so I think the biggest proponent of what was said in that little excerpt is to give people the idea, like, you're going to be able to get a plan, you're going to be able to get personal training and one-on-one experience where you can enjoy the process without that, mm-hmm. you know, gym intimidation factor. And a big thing, you know, another component of what was said in there is that you're going to fall in love with it. You're going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. We're really big on sustainability. I'm sure everyone knows someone, or at least they probably know a multitude of people who have wanted to lose weight or did lose weight and then gained it all right back. Mm-hmm. I've never had anyone come in my office and tell me, Marcus, I want to lose 50 pounds and then I want to gain all 50 of it right back as quickly as possible. it doesn't exist. Nobody wants that. And what a lot of people are doing is taking really drastic measures and doing a bunch of stuff that they really, really don't enjoy mm-hmm. as a means to an end to get to that, whatever their goal is, 50 pounds down or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if they're doing it in that, in a way that they don't enjoy, they're not going to sustain that and continue the process and maintain the goals that they actually achieve.
Right.
And so if we can put together a program that works for the individual that they enjoy, mm-hmm. then it's something where we're going to constantly be attacking the goals that you're trying to achieve, and then we're going to stay there once you get there.
Right. No, that's true. And I could see that when I went into your guys' location. So you have this private area, and I think it also helps people, like you said, not only feel okay, but it helps you stay motivated. Everyone that's probably listening has had memberships at those places that are $10 or $20 a month,
yep.
and you don't go. You know, nobody's yeah. telling you to go. They actually don't want you to go.
That's their whole business model.
Yeah, because they sell 5,000 memberships. It's like there's no way 5,000 people could work out there at the same time.
It's the easiest passive income you yeah. could ever achieve.
Yeah. I think I still have one on my credit card somewhere.
Yeah, most people do. I don't. I know very few people. You know, I know a lot of people completely outside of the fitness realm.
Yeah.
Honestly, I prefer to hang out with those people.
Yeah.
Fitness people aren't my favorite, despite the fact that I am one. But
yeah.
Almost everyone I know either has or has had a gym membership that they, you know, $20-$30 a month is nothing. Like mm-hmm. you can lose that justifiably and tell yourself, well, I didn't go this month, but I'll go next month. So I'm not going to cancel my membership.
Right.
And the next thing you know, you've paid for 10 straight years on this $30 a month membership. You've never gone. And there's thousands of other people who are in that exact same boat. And for those gyms, it's like, cool. We just are getting paid for nothing. We're getting a bunch of money from a bunch of people who don't add any depreciation to our equipment and, you know, that we're not cleaning up after them because they're not even showing up.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they want.
Exactly.
And I don't blame them. I think it's a good business model, frankly.
Yeah.
We're doing the exact polar opposite of that.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I'm not worried about a multitude of people paying me a little bit of money to not even show up. And yeah, you might pay me a little bit more to do what we're doing, but you're actually going to achieve those results. Mm-hmm. You know, you're gonna achieve the goals that you're after. You're gonna enjoy the process. And like I said, you know, as long as you stick to it, you'll maintain those yeah. results as well.
So the people you work with, some of them are athletes, but some of these are yeah. business people. Some of these are people that are out of shape. Some of them are in really good shape. So like there's no qualifications to come.
Yeah. Well, yeah, not really. Basically, if you want to lose body fat, if you want to improve your body composition,
mm-hmm.
that in a nutshell, that's what we do.
Right.
And that's what almost everybody wants. Mm-hmm. So like if you were to come to me and say, hey, you know, I'm training for the Olympics, I'm going to be a 400-meter hurdler,
yeah.
I'll refer you to somebody else.
Right.
I would love to work with people like that, but I don't have, that's not my expertise. That's not what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I work with a lot of bodybuilders and fitness competitors of varying sorts. That's probably 50% of my business. And then the other 50% is, like I said, anybody who wants to improve their body composition, basically look better, feel better,
mm-hmm.
you know, lose weight. Weight loss is obviously probably the biggest. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, of course, that's what Katie works with exclusively is just,
yeah,
it doesn't matter what you do for a living or your age or anything like that, as long as your goal is to be healthier and look mm-hmm. better, feel better.
Yeah, the private experience is like stuff that it's something special because they do that in other cities, big cities where, you know, celebrities have these private experience gyms. And it's like you're bringing that to the middle of Webster Groves. And I think that, you know, it's truly a bucket list spot for people to check out. But I want to hear about your story before this. So you weren't always into fitness. You weren't always a bodybuilder. But growing up, tell us kind of where you're from growing up and kind of what led you to becoming an adult here.
So I grew up in St. Charles.
Shout out, me too.
Oh, no way.
Out in Winsville, like Winsville Lake, St. Louis area.
Yeah. I'm on like the other side.
It still counts. It's still St. Charles County.
Francis Howell North School District.
Yeah.
Although I went to CBC. I did go to private school. So I went to CBC.
Yeah.
I was an athlete my whole life, but, you know, sports that were completely counterintuitive to the bodybuilding lifestyle. I played soccer. I played basketball. Played basketball in college, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my main focus for my entire upbringing, basically, mm-hmm. was basketball. So I've always been like heavily invested into some version of the fitness industry,
mm-hmm.
Which is what made it a really easy transition into bodybuilding once basketball was done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a 5'11 white guy. I wasn't going to the NBA. I knew that probably
got to college though, farther than a lot.
Yeah. And that was kind of my whole goal with basketball was like, and I knew probably by 7th, 8th grade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You kind of know.
You're not going to the NBA. You're just not. Like I watched the NBA religiously.
Yeah.
There's no 5'11 white guys in the whole league. There's like not one.
Yeah.
So, it was pretty real. It was pretty unreasonable for me to assume that I was going to go that far, but it was like, but I'm going to take this as far as I can go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting a college education paid for, I'll take it, mm-hmm. you know? So that's what I did with that. And it was like my senior year of college or going into my senior year of college where the end of the road was, you know, looming.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to go play pro ball. I knew that. So it was like, all right, I have to stay competitive in some way, shape, or form because I don't know how to survive without channeling that
right.
competitive nature. I think most human beings claim to be competitive or think that they're competitive because I think it's just human nature to be competitive in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a spectrum to that.
Yeah.
And like the upper echelon of competitive people, it's really hard for most people to wrap their head around.
Mm-hmm.
It's like psychosis. Like you have to be competitive in some way, shape, or form to a fault, to the point that it could be really annoying for people that are around you
mm-hmm.
when you're constantly finding ways to just like generate some form of competition.
Right.
And I know that I'm that kind of guy, always mm-hmm. will be that guy. I'm proud of that fact, frankly.
Yeah.
So I knew like I had to do something competitively.
I'm like that too. Even with my wife, we'll be playing a board game and
yeah.
it just goes crazy. I'm like, no, I'm going to win this board game.
Yeah.
You know, it's yeah. just like, and I was an athlete in high school, not in college, but it's just like, I think it fuels you afterlife. Like guys need that. It gives you camaraderie. Even if I'm competing, like I want to beat you in something, like it's not even about like now it's business for me. It's like, I just want to yeah. beat that person. That person has no idea I'm competing with them.
100%.
They don't even know who I am, yeah. but I feel like I'm competing. It's like the Tom Brady effect.
It's exactly, you know? That's exactly
the seventh round pick guy.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm talking about when yeah. I say, I know that I have to constantly find ways to channel that competitive nature. I go hiking all the time.
Yeah.
That's probably my favorite hobby, frankly. Yeah. And it's an easy integration into bodybuilding. I have to do a lot of cardio to get ready for shows and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I can kill two birds with one stone.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm hiking on the hiking trail, if there's someone up ahead of me,
catch up.
They don't know, but I'm racing them.
I'm now.
Yeah, they have no idea that we're in a competition, but we are,
yeah.
and I always win. So, yeah, that competitive nature thing, it's just, it's unavoidable.
Does that ever hurt you, though? Because, like, you were, let's say you graduated college, you're, like, 22, you're so competitive, but then you have to go probably work a desk job. You got to go work some other job. Like that yeah. hurts you in that because then you feel like you're not doing anything. You're like, what am I doing? Like, yes, I'm getting a paycheck, but I'm not like, I have no purpose. Why would I wake up early? Like in basketball, you never get paid,
yeah.
but you do 2-a-days. You wake up, you don't go out on the weekends because you have game days. Like you, yeah. you risk all these things that all the other kids were having fun and you can't. I mean, you still can a little bit, but not really.
No,
you
know? No, you're yeah. absolutely right. And that was exactly why I knew I had to find what was next, like mm-hmm. what competitive mm-hmm. outlet am I going to engage in next?
Mm-hmm.
And at the time it was between MMA and bodybuilding.
Mm-hmm.
I was very big into as a consumer, as a fan, I still am a big fan of MMA.
Mm-hmm. That was the early days, wasn't that? Was that like 10 years ago?
It was like I graduated college in 2009.
So, okay.
Yeah, like George St. Pierre was on the, you know, at the top. Yeah,
Chuck Liddell was in there probably.
He was still fighting, but he yeah. was getting a little bit closer to retirement. My favorite fighter of that era, he wasn't even in the UFC, it was Fedor Emelianenko.
Yeah, the Russian guy.
I think he's still by far the greatest heavyweight of all time.
I used to watch clips of him, and he would, like, train up in, like, he was like the Khabib before Khabib yeah. was Khabib. Like, mm-hmm. that's how badass those dudes are from Russia. And
yeah.
they used to show clips. Like, I remember I got the video game and they didn't have him on there, but then they yeah. made the new game and then they put him on there. And
yeah.
he was just a beast. He wasn't even a huge dude. He was kind of chubby.
He was yeah, yeah. kind of a dad bod.
Yeah.
The dude was just an absolute machine. I mean, I think most, like, you know, diehard MMA people agree.
Yeah.
I think he would slaughter any heavyweight yeah. in any era in his prime.
Yeah.
It's just, he was in a transitional period where the Pride organization was over in Japan, and it was just as big basically as the UFC, and most of the best heavyweights were fighting in Pride.
Yeah.
And then they started to transition into the UFC as his career started to wind down a little bit. And so yeah. a lot of people don't realize that, like, I think Francis Ngannou would get destroyed by the prime version of Fedor Emelianenko. I don't think anyone that's ever been in the UFC as a heavyweight would be able to stand with him.
Yeah.
He was undefeated for his entire career, and he fought a lot of guys that went on to become UFC heavyweight champions and smoked all of them.
Yeah.
He never really lost. His only loss on his record was just kind of a weird rule thing in Pride. Yeah. He got cut instantly.
It's
like,
kind of like John Jones thing. Like he had a
disqualification.
Like elbowed him or something. Yeah.
John Jones's was, he technically did break it's just a stupid rule that he kind of incidentally broke, but I guess by the letter of the law, they did what you're supposed to do. Yeah. With Fedor, there was no discrepancy. The first engagement between him and the guy he was fighting, it was like an incidental, like their heads collided and he had a horrible cut and they couldn't get the cut cleaned up enough. So they just forfeited the fight. And that's in Pride's organization, that counted as a loss. Mm-hmm. The fight didn't even really happen. It was like 10 seconds in and they just stopped it. So, and then he lost, you know, when he was like 40 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
So fighting in MMA, like, did you ever, so what, you had a path. You're like, I want to do, you know, I want to fight or I want to bodybuild.
Yeah.
You know, so what path did you end up taking right after?
I went with bodybuilding and I made the right choice. MMA is amazing. I still love it. There's a small part of me that there's like that what if factor. Like, man, what if I would have gone that route? How much different would my life be?
Yeah.
Indescribably different is the answer to that question. But yeah. I'm glad I went with bodybuilding, definitely.
Yeah, for your, like, head's sake and just from, like, your, like, a lot of those guys, it's an ultimate. I mean, both of those options are not the most lucrative options.
No, neither
one. Neither of them are.
At all.
So, like, did you have people in your corner like, dude, like, you just got an education, like, why don't you go work at this place? You have job offers or, like, you just needed to.
Well, and I still did that stuff. You know, I still worked in a professional setting. So, I mean.
You're talking about your competitive hobby after school.
Yeah.
Yeah, you still needed to have a hobby. Yeah.
And that was always going to be something that I took incredibly seriously.
Mm-hmm.
As serious
as. Because hobby's not even the right word. It's a job.
Basically. Yeah. It's just a job you don't get paid for. Yeah. It's like an unpaid.
But that's what a hobby is, technically.
Yeah.
But
it's just like an unpaid internship that I've been doing for the last 14 years or whatever it's been. Yeah. So, again, with MMA, it would have come with a lot of, you know, potential head injuries and potentially CTE and just stuff that I'm glad I didn't run the risk of doing.
Mm-hmm.
Not that there's no risk. There's plenty of risks in bodybuilding too, but not the same kind. So I made the right choice, I think.
So when you made that choice, like when was your first competition? Like were you pretty in good, like you were in good shape playing basketball, but it's a completely different
style.
Like you were leaner. You don't want to, you're too big for basketball. I mean, you'd be bullying people, but like just being like, were you leaner? Like how did you compete? Like when did you compete? Tell us about like your first time getting into it.
So senior year basketball season ended March of 2009. And basically, I immediately transitioned into training for bodybuilding purposes like the day that our season ended.
Mm-hmm.
I was prepared for that. I was, you know, I was actually, to be honest with you, I was training like a bodybuilder in the middle of our season just because I was like really excited to make that transition.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I knew no matter what happens the rest of the season, my body or my basketball career is over after our last game. So it's like, you know. I took it as just as seriously as ever, but I'm like, I'll get a head start on this lifting, you know, lifting for building muscle purposes thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was in spring of 2009. I did my first show in the spring of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So I took 2 years to grow, build enough muscle to actually be competitive. So, you know, for probably 99.9% of the listeners, they wouldn't understand the intricacies here, but when I started bodybuilding, the only category for men was bodybuilding. Now they have classic physique and they have men's physique, which are kind of
your everyday kind of
small guys that aren't as huge and gigantically muscular. So that my only option was to be against the giant guys.
To get huge.
So when you're a college basketball player, if you try to compete within that first year, you're not going to have enough muscle. I mean, you could argue that I didn't have enough when I did do my first show 2 years later, but it was a small show in Southern Indiana and I won it. So, you know, it went well, but like I said, I had to take that 2 years to lay the groundwork for a physique worthy of competing.
Walk us through like back then, like where did, what was your day to day like? Like, how intensive was it? You know, were you getting training by somebody, or was this like out of books or YouTube? Like, walk us through that day to day, because I don't think people realize how much your life has to shift. Like, yeah, it's not like a workout challenge. Like,
right,
there's good challenges out there that are pretty hard, but it's not, it's more than that. You know?
Yeah, bodybuilding's a lot different. And unfortunately, the fitness challenge culture has led some people to believe that bodybuilding is like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people contact me all the time that are like, hey, I think I'm going to try this show in 8 weeks. Can you help me get ready for it? And I'm like, oh, God.
And you're looking at them like, hey, like, you look good, but
sometimes they look good. Yeah. Sometimes they don't. And it's like, what do you mean 8 weeks?
Right.
I'm like, you got a year or two of again, like I said, laying the groundwork to have a physique worthy of doing this at a reasonably high level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The promoters of the show don't turn anyone down. You could go right now and turn in an entry form and get on stage.
Yeah.
They'll take your money.
Of course.
Are you going to be competitive?
Yeah.
No. And if you're not, then what's the point of doing a competition?
Exactly.
And so, okay. So to hone back in on your question. Yeah. I mean, it's a 24-hour a day commitment. I also don't want that to freak people out either. Cause it's not, when I say it's a 24-hour a day commitment, you just have to be in tune with a lot of things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you're working, like you're not actively working 24 hours a day for the bodybuilding lifestyle, but you do have to be conscious of like, how much sleep am I getting and is it consistent and is it quality sleep? You have to have all your meals organized to the point that they're available to eat at any given moment in a day, which is very difficult for a lot of people. It takes a lot of planning and a lot of structure. You know, you're eating a lot of the same. You don't necessarily have to eat the same things every day, but it's a lot
easier.
It's so much simpler.
If you're cooking and if you're buying, then you're spending a lot more money. But if you're cooking,
yes,
your own, it's like it's easier just to knock out a whole thing of the same meals.
Way easier. And yeah, and to be clear, that's a deterrent for some people. They're like, I can't eat the same thing every day. And I'm like, you do eat the same thing every day. Everyone does. We're, yeah, humans are creatures of habit.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that same thing every day, I'm making quotations here if people are listening, is a cheeseburger and fries. You know, you still, most people primarily eat almost the exact same thing every day.
Mm-hmm.
So when people are like, I couldn't do that, I'm like, you do that. You just don't think of it like that.
Right.
But anyway, the point being that, like, you know, every little detail of your life has to be structured if you want to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can, like I said, you can do bodybuilding. You can show up and turn in an entry form and you know, get
say
your
you
ass handed
it
to you.
And
yeah,
say you did
exactly. And
it.
Some,
yeah,
people do just want to say that they did it.
Mm-hmm. And it might motivate those people to just get in shape. And they might do it for different reasons.
For sure.
Know? Give and you a structure like, hey, I'm working towards a goal.
As long know? As, so if someone were to come to me as a coach and want to become a client, as long as they articulate the exactly what you just said at the forefront, like, listen, I don't care about winning. I just want to do this. I want to say that I did it. I'll do the best that I can, but this isn't going to be like a diehard serious thing that I want to make a career out of or whatever.
Right.
I'll work with a person like that.
Yeah.
Semi-reluctantly, I would much rather have someone who wants
it's
to do
in.
It all. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But as long as you have the, you know, but what I don't like is people who come in verbally all in, ready to be gung-ho about it, that just aren't.
And then half-ass it.
Yes.
Yeah. Because you're all in. You're like, I'm all in on you.
Yeah. I'm all in on them as a coach, and I'm all in on this sport as, you know, in every capacity. So it's like kind of disrespectful to the sport if you're only going to give a small percentage of what you're telling me you're going to give. Again, if you come to me saying, I don't care about winning, I just want to do it, okay, then we'll treat it like that.
Yeah.
I'm still going to give you a plan that's optimal, and you can choose to follow that optimally, or you can choose to follow that in the capacity that you're willing to, and you know, you're going to get as far, you're going to get as much out of it as you're going to put into it.
So did you have a coach then at the beginning, or did you do it on your own?
I did it entirely on my own.
How were you keeping track? Were you just taking a notepad and like, because they didn't have any good apps and stuff back then?
No,
for
apps
anything.
Barely existed at all when I started. Fitness apps did not at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was literally like notebook, paper, and pen, and I wrote down.
I still
down,
see old, like, no, I say old guys. I still see old guys at the gym. I love when I see an old guy that's in his 60s and he has a
writing
notepad.
Stuff down.
It's freaking badass.
Well, it's huge, man, and that it's something that I've preached forever. You don't have to write it down by hand on paper. You don't even have to use an app. If you just, you know, anything, text yourself. Like, okay, this week I did 100 pounds for 10 reps, so that when you go do that same exercise next week, you can do 105 pounds for. You know, try to shoot for 10 reps with 105 pounds.
Yeah, or you need to track. You need to keep track of it. You're not going to
remember. That's how you make progress.
Yeah, there is something special about writing, physically writing, though.
I agree.
Your mind triggers something when you write down your goals.
I totally agree.
So you were doing it yourself. So that's tough. Being accountable, you know, everybody that's listening to this has tried a fitness journey and tried to do it on their own and we're not accountable. So tell us about some of those failures. Tell us about, you know, because it wasn't two straight years of complete savagery and just complete, you know, 24 hours every day. Like there were days where you messed up and you're like, shit, I got to start over tomorrow. Yeah.
And there still are. I mean, there's still, when it comes to my diet, it's nowadays pretty rare for me to just, you know, completely lose it and screw up because I'm so, it's just such a habit now that it's kind of really easy for me. Mm-hmm. And it can be that way for everyone, by the way.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of making a habit of following the structure. Once you have made a habit of following the structure of a good meal plan, it's like, why did I ever do anything differently? Mm-hmm. This is so easy and you can make it very much enjoyable.
And do you cook on your own a lot?
Or
do you
It's, I've basically just found ways where I don't like to cook and I'm not very good at it. Mm-hmm. So I've mastered the simplicity factor. So like my diet is really easy. Like a lot of the foods that I eat are just, for example, a lot of my carb sources are like rice cakes, bagels, English muffins, stuff that you can just literally pull out of a bag and eat. Yeah, you don't have to heat it up. You don't have to refrigerate it. It's just there. Mm-hmm. I also travel a lot when I'm in prep and stuff. So it makes it easier to travel. As far as like my protein sources, I do ground chicken, ground turkey, ground beef primarily because I can just brown a big, huge pan of it and have it for, you know, the rest of the week. Mm-hmm. And it's simple. It doesn't require anything. Mm-hmm. Everyone is capable of cooking in that capacity. Mm-hmm. So I guess, yeah, I've just gotten really good at making it really simple. Mm-hmm. And if it's simple and enjoyable, why wouldn't you follow it?
Right.
But again, not to get too far off from your question, which is about the, you know, the kind of the failures and stuff like that. Yeah. Probably the most common thing in bodybuilding that can be really toxic about it is the concept of off season and the way most people treat off season. Mm-hmm. So your off season is the period of time where you go into more of a calorie surplus. So you're eating more, you're not doing as much cardio. So you're able to spend less time physically actively approaching the sport. And because you're eating more and your goal is to grow and build muscle, which would require you to gain some weight, people take it way too far. They start justifying eating junk food like constantly.
Because they're in off season. I'm in off season.
I'm in off season. I'm bulking. I'm trying to grow. I'm bulking. Bulking is the most toxic word
the meme
in the fitness
that's all
industry.
Out there. It's bulk season.
Yeah.
It's fluffy boy season.
I'm no different, man. I was that guy for a long time. I've gotten up to... Like, if you look at me now, I'm like 245.
Yeah.
I've been 295.
Wow.
And I wasn't any more muscular at 295 than I am at 245. I just had that much extra body fat from eating garbage, basically, and justifying it. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge failure that I no longer fall into the trap of.
Because off season, you compare it to basketball, it's like those guys are working out
because
they come in and then you have those guys that come into training camp overweight and they're like, dude, you weren't working out over on the off season,
and then they have a bad season. And then in the NBA's case, those guys lose a contract or not lose a contract, but make it harder to get signed to another contract, which could be tens of millions of dollars that they're losing. Bodybuilding off season is very much like a traditional sports off season, or at least it should be. Mm-hmm. It's you're essentially doing the same thing. You're just not actually competing where the stakes are highest. Mm-hmm. But you still have to train. You still have to work hard. Mm-hmm. As far as your diet is concerned, you shouldn't get too far over your contest weight. despite the fact that you are trying to gain some weight, mm-hmm. it feels kind of counterintuitive because it's like, okay, like my show I just recently did, I was around 220. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like 245 now, which is like I've gained 25 pounds. That's kind of the sweet spot. That's where you want to be. You want to gain some weight.
Yeah. So you're cutting weight or you're just gradually getting to that? Like, is there a weight class for what you're doing?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if it was like wrestling or fighting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have kind of floated between the heavyweight and the super heavyweight class. This last show, I was a heavyweight. And I may still be, I don't know. I may never go back into the super heavyweight. It just depends. Wherever I look best is where I'll compete, mm-hmm. but I'm kind of on that fence. So for the super heavies, you have to be, or I guess that weight cutoff for the heavyweights is 225 and a quarter. Anything above that is a super heavyweight, and that there's no limit in the super heavies.
Oh, and that just goes up to 350.
Anything. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the heavyweights, you have to be under 225 and a quarter. So, again, I'll die. You know, my next show is going to be the same one I just did. So, it'll be in November. Mm-hmm. Whatever I diet down to, wherever I look best, whatever that weight happens to be is what weight class I'll be in.
So, what about competing? So, you know, there's obviously you can make money on some of these, but really you're spending so much money to get to where you need to be that it's almost like a loss or break even almost at all. Like, tell us about that process. Yeah. I don't think many people know about that because I know there's successful people, but there's the one percenters of everything, you know?
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. So I just to give you a little anecdote, I had a guy recently, he was in his 50s, mm-hmm. came to me, wanted to hire me, wanted to do a show, blah, blah, blah. And his reasoning for wanting to do the show was because there's a lot of money in this. And I was like, hey, man, there's no money in this. There is absolutely zero money in this whole sport. The one percenters, and to break it down even more specifically, the top, let's say, 6 to 10 open male pro bodybuilders make really good money just being a bodybuilder. That's it. There's now in some of the other categories, like, I don't know if you've heard of Chris Bumstead. Mm-hmm. He's become like a celebrity.
But they're like influencers now.
Yeah, Chris Bumstead has like over 20 million Instagram followers. So, and it's, again, a lot of his following comes from the fact that he's very good looking. He's very well spoken. You know, he's got all of this. He's making almost all of his money outside of the sport of bodybuilding.
Mm-hmm.
He
makes 50 brand deals and different things like that.
I can tell you exactly how much money he makes directly from bodybuilding, and it's $50,000 a year.
Yeah.
That is it. He's only the last like 4 years, he's only competed at the Olympia and he's won it all four times. Or maybe he might have just won his fifth. I can't remember now. Either way, prize money for the Classic Physique Olympia winner is $50,000. Mm-hmm. So he is the best of the best in the world. And his contract, if you will, is for $50,000.
Right.
LeBron James is, we'll call him the best of the best in the world at basketball. Just from basketball alone, yeah, like over 40, yeah, million, not thousand.
And he spends $50,000 probably a week on his body.
Yeah, exactly.
So what that guy makes in a whole year, he's spending that on his body.
And it's an amazing investment because the return.
I think it's $2 million a year he spends on his body.
Yeah, it's seven figures a year on massage therapy and chiropractic and training.
He sleeps in like those Cairo tanks now. Like, I don't know what that dude does, but I don't think he's going to stop anytime soon. It's crazy.
All I know is he's averaging MVP caliber numbers in his 21st NBA season, which makes no sense.
Yeah.
None whatsoever. But yeah.
So going back to it, it's not like, so that's what's hard because somebody wants to go to the NBA. Some people want to do it because of passion, but they also are like, I can take care of my entire family off this.
Yeah.
You know, there's a little bit more of that back of your head. Like, hey, I can get out of this neighborhood. I can go get my one contract and change my family's life.
I had tons of guys that I played AAU ball with and a few that I played like high school ball with and college ball with that went on to play overseas.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like the NBA is not your only option to make money in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're the worst NBA player, the league minimum is like 600K.
Right.
So like, even if you're the worst, you don't even get on the floor. You're making the same money as like a brain surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I could live off that.
Exactly.
And then there's many different levels outside of the NBA. You can go play in a multitude of different countries
and make great money.
Exactly.
So what would drive like somebody to attack your sport? because it has to be, it's not financial.
No, it has to be, passion. You have to love the sport. You have to really love the sport.
So you studied guys and like you fell in love with the sport, but then also it's something that, like you said, it's your internship that you're always doing. Like it's just, you do it cause you're still doing it. I mean, it's 15 years later now.
I'm also kind of starting to get to that age where people are like, damn man, not a lot of people your age are still doing this.
And you're like, fuck.
I hate hearing that part, but you have to love it. It's just as simple as that. And if you don't love it, you will not put 100% into it. And if you don't put 100% into it, you're not going to get far no matter what. Even if you do put 100% into it, you may not get far. And you have to be totally aware of that when you go into it, because it's like, again, you won't put 100% in unless you really love this. Right. So you might go into it and know, I'm not going to beat these genetic freaks out there. That's the case for me a lot of times. Yeah. You know,
there's just guys that are just built different.
Aren't going to beat them. Yeah, mm-hmm. There's people that they're just like aliens, man. Mm-hmm. So you've probably watched Victor Wembanyama.
Oh, yeah. He's an alien.
There's bodybuilding versions of that. Yeah. They look exactly the opposite body type
like
of him.
Like if you squeeze him down.
Yeah.
Like, and he's just.
It's these guys are typically short and they have a tiny waist and their shoulders.
You see him next to Shaq? Like he soars over Shaq.
Everyone, man. That kid is, that's the future right there.
That kid is unbelievable.
I said almost 2 years ago when he was just a teenager playing in France, I was like, 20 years from now, and I will go on record saying this, we're going to be having the Wembanyama-LeBron debate. Mm-hmm. Jordan will be an afterthought. We'll be thinking of Jordan the way we think of
Wilt Chamberlain and the old guys, Magic Johnson. People won't even remember him because it's so long ago. Like, nobody's going to – like, you won't have your uncles that used to watch him.
People will mention him. It'll be like, man, the guys back in the day, like Jordan and those guys were great. But
you think Wimby can't hold up. He's too skinny. He's too tall.
It's what people are saying. It's easy to say that because we haven't seen anyone with that body type succeed.
He's too tall. Like, his legs are just like sticks, dude. It's crazy.
Hasn't shown any signs of of being injury prone yet.
Right.
And the skill set at his size, no one's even been remotely as skilled as him.
Yeah.
And he's a kid. He just turned 20. Yeah. So like, he's only going to physically mature and get, you know, like if you, not to go down this basketball rabbit hole, but
KD was like that too, though.
KD was like that. A better example is Giannis.
If you know Tecovas, you know that they make some of the best and most comfortable Western boots around. But what you might not know is that Tecovas has a store right here in St. Louis at Plaza Frontenac. Stop into their store and you'll find the finest handmade cowboy boots, jeans, belts, cowboy hats, and even apparel for both men and women. While you shop, enjoy complimentary drinks, boot shines, custom hat and boot branding, and more. Come visit the Tecovas store at Plaza Frontenac and let them help you find your new favorite pair of boots or your first pair of boots ever. Tecovas, don't go gently.
Yo, the lights just went out in the studio. I know we were talking about basketball. We're going to get back on track. We're going to talk about Marcus here. So, Marcus, tell us about what St. Louis means to you, what this city has meant to you. Have you always lived here? I mean, you said you travel a lot, right?
I travel a decent amount for work-related stuff. But, yeah, I was born in St. Louis or in St. Charles. Mm-hmm. Lived here almost my whole life. I went to Missouri Rolla my freshman year. Mm-hmm. So that was outside St. Louis.
Yeah.
Then I came back, went to Merrimack for a year. So I was back in St. Louis, lived in Kansas City for 2 years. And then I spent a year living in Indiana. When I did my first show, actually, I was living in Indiana, but almost all but basically 4 years of my life have been spent in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. It's home. It's simple as that. It's home. I think everyone who's grown up and lived in St. Louis most of their life has considered moving and then they either do and end up a lot of times coming back or they just never move. And I was one of those that I never moved because I wanted to move to some cool destination, but it was a very short period of time before I
mentality.
Yeah. And it's not, it really isn't. Like my brother lives in LA and you know, the grass should be greener in LA.
Yeah.
And even just going out and visiting him, it's like the first, and I've been to LA, I've been to Southern California a million times. I love it out there. But the first time I went out and visited him, you get that like, man,
the FOMO.
I should move out.
You're dude, like you go to Muscle Beach or you go to all those places. You're like, dude, this should be me.
I should be here. I should be moving. I should do this. What would, you know, my career could take off. And then it's like, I go back and visit a few more times and I'm like, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
This is a fun place to visit. St. Louis is home. Right. So yeah, I think it's always going to be home for me.
Mm-hmm. So like, was there like any like pivotal points in your career? Like any like points where you're like, okay, like this is what I'm going to do. Cause like you didn't open the gym for a while. Tell us about like kind of opening the gym and the conception of all that.
Yeah. So 2018, I didn't have a very good year in 2018 from the business's perspective. At that time, I was exclusively working with people online and I exclusively worked with competitors. And it was around that time where social media really took an uptick, where everybody had a social media page and they were promoting something on it. And yeah, everyone can relate to that now.
Exactly.
And, you know, I was one of the only contest prep coaches in St. Louis, mm-hmm, which quickly became, there was like 100 of them. And then that same trend went nationwide. I had clients all over the country and those started to diminish because there were so many other options for people that,
right,
all of the potential clientele was spread throughout, mm-hmm, you know, exponentially more people. So I started to take a dip business-wise, and I was like, I got to do something different. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to go into the in-person one-on-one style training realm, which very quickly I came to the conclusion, like, I can't just rely on some of these gyms to allow me to independently train
inside of their infrastructure.
Yes, yeah. I need my own thing. And I would never work for anybody else, mm-hmm, period. I won't do it. Mm-hmm. No matter how good of a boss somebody may or may not be, I don't want to work for them. Mm-hmm. I can't work for other people. It's just how my brain works. I do not
like... I think I'm the same way too, but I just don't know why other people say that too.
Unless I'm asking somebody specifically for advice, I don't want any advice.
Yeah.
And I definitely don't like to be told what to do under any circumstances. Yeah. To the point that if you're telling me to do something and I even know that it's in my best interest to do what you're telling me, I will do the opposite. even if I know it's a stupid decision, I will do the opposite just because I do not like being told what to do. And it's not like I'm coachable, you know, but I'm coachable when I'm asking for coaching.
So that's the thing. It's like you ask advice from people that have what you want and who have been where you've been.
Yep.
A lot of people want to give advice. We're in the advice era where everybody has an experience about everything that you've ever been through. And really, unless somebody asks me, like I've had a lot of mentors over the years, and now like I have younger kids asking me stuff and I'm like, oh, I want to pour into them.
Yeah.
Because you just want to pour into them. But like you have to get advice from people that have been where you've been and are doing what you're doing. You know?
Yeah. And I won't provide unsolicited advice to anybody. Yeah,
exactly.
It probably would be in my best interest to do it because, mm-hmm, some people do like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would probably draw more clientele to my business if I did start reaching out to people.
Yeah, like
and
send
offering
a DM and be like, hey, man, you know, like, but yeah, it's just not your style.
Yeah. And I'm not saying I wouldn't go down that route from a business perspective. My point from my perspective is I just do not like being, mm-hmm, instructed unless
so
I'm
had a lot of iterations of your business. You did the online route, you did the one-on-one route, and then.
Then it was the gym, and the gym started out some people don't know this, people who know me well do, but I was living in South City at the time, and I decided I was going to move to the county and put a gym inside my house. So I moved, you know, looked around. Arnold ended up being the best option for my budget and for the requirements for my basement in order to put a gym in it. Mm-hmm. So for the last, I guess, almost, what would it be? The last 5 years, I've lived in Arnold, and for 4 of those years, I had my gym completely. Like,
so you
it was
had
like
to walk
scale.
Around, you had to have the walk out so people could come around the back.
Yep. I had to be, you know, when I was moving in, I told my realtor, I was like, he was like, what? So I was like, I need an unfinished, a minimum 8 foot pour with, you know, so the ceilings were high enough. It needs to be a walk out, and I need at least like a minimum 1,000 square feet. And he's like, okay, but like, what do you want your house? Like, what do you want in your house? Where
do you want
to
like
be
three
living?
Bathrooms? Do you want two?
Yeah, I'm like, dude, I don't care. It's as long as the gym is suitable, I'll make everything else work. And so, yeah, so for 4 years, it was the gym that you've been to, 2.0 mm-hmm. Training Systems, was in my basement. Mm-hmm. I called it Big Dog's Gym.
So, all that equipment you started moving over to this spot. Like, that's a lot of the equipment you've accrued over the years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the same stuff, though. I've added 2 or 3 pieces of equipment since we've been in the commercial space in Webster, but mm-hmm. almost all of that stuff was in my basement, and for 4 years I operated the whole business out of there.
Yeah.
Wasn't until I hired Katie that we started running into issues. You know, Katie just turned 23, So a lot of the clientele she was attracting was other young girls, mm-hmm. some even teenage girls. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, yeah, you can train with me. And then here's the address. It's this 30-something-year-old guy's basement. You know, so.
Yeah, you're like, all right, I got to make a move.
It was just tough for her to get clients. And it limited me quite a bit, too. Yeah. So getting into that commercial space definitely opened a lot of doors for her and again, even for me as well. Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of the story of how
it's
all of that
cool,
happened.
Like opening up a commercial space, but then making it not open to the public is such a hard thought because you're paying an extra rent. So you're like, okay, now my expenses are going up. Now I'm expanding my team, you know, and now I'm doing this. So
it's extra funny because it kind of sucks because when people drive by, a lot of times they're like, the place is empty. How are they keeping the doors open?
Exactly.
It's because we're killing it online. Like a lot of our business is done online. Like we have the 2.0 training systems app where we do people's nutrition and training programming. Like I said, I have clients all over the country. Mm-hmm. And so that covers the rent, no problem. Right. You know, but the goal is to fill out the in-person
the
training space.
Gym. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. And as that grows, we'll bring on more trainers.
No, that's awesome. Having like a brick and mortar is special too. It's just cooler. It just feels good. So I want to ask you two more questions. Last one would be, what advice would you give to a 21-year-old? I'm asking you for advice to a 21-year-old bodybuilder or somebody that wants to join that or start that journey.
The first thing I would say is truly make sure that you love bodybuilding and that you love training and you love everything that comes along with it. Because if you're doing it for attention or for social media likes or whatever, it's not going to be fulfilling for you like you think it might be. And you will not follow through with it 100%. Mm-hmm. And it would be you'll spend a lot of money and a lot of time doing something that's not going to be as fulfilling as you're expecting it to be. Mm-hmm. So if you really love it, if you truly are passionate about bodybuilding and are willing to make it an entire lifestyle, dive in. Mm-hmm. And another bit of advice would be hire a coach and work with that coach long term. Mm-hmm. Don't hire a coach 3 months before the show and work with them exclusively for those 3 months and then do your own thing afterwards. Even if you think you know everything, which by the way, if you're 21, you don't know anything. I'm 37 and I've been doing this for a living and literally eat, sleep, and breathe this. And I don't know everything.
Exactly.
So despite the fact that you probably think you know everything, as a matter of fact, are you familiar with the Dunning-Kruger effect?
Mm-mm.
So I'll make it a really short explanation. Basically, when you are completely novice to a new concept and you just started learning about this new concept, your confidence in your knowledge of that concept is highest it will ever be.
Yeah.
You think you're an expert because you learned some obscure information about something that the general public doesn't know. And you're like, oh, I know everything. And then as you learn more and more and more and become closer and closer to an expert, your confidence level will rapidly diminish. It'll come back up, but it'll never reach the confidence level you were when you very first started.
Mm-hmm.
21 is about the age a lot of people start to get into bodybuilding. So to stay on the specificity of your question, mm-hmm. if you're 21, you're probably incredibly confident in your bodybuilding capabilities.
And you're like athletic prime and
you're
feel
in the prime
good.
Of your life in every capacity. And now you've YouTubed or Googled some information about insulin sensitivity and you're like, oh yeah, I know how the body works and I know how to train and I'm going to be the best bodybuilder. And then the big one is that they immediately transition to becoming coaches right away. They don't know what they're doing there either.
Yeah.
So again, just make sure that you're really in love with the sport and the process and take it a day at a time. Mm-hmm. Hire someone that's going to help you through the process and, you know, make as much of it as you can because, you know, there's a very short shelf life for this sport.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because most people start in their 20s.
Right.
You know, we'll go back to the basketball analogy. Nobody starts playing basketball in their 20s.
Exactly.
Your career's already over if you're starting in your 20s. Mm-hmm. So as a bodybuilder,
it's unique in that way.
It's an older person sport,
mm-hmm.
but no sport is an old person sport. At a certain point, your body's not going to be able to do what it used to be able to do. So
you've
got like a 10 to 15 year window at best.
Right.
If you start relatively young to really make the most of it. And if you waste 10 of those years thinking you know everything, you're going to have a lot of regrets.
Yeah. So be a sponge, you know.
100%.
And then to wrap up the STL bucket list. So the STL bucket list show highlights the people and places that make St. Louis special.
Yeah.
Tell us about some of those places that make St. Louis special to you. What's on your bucket list?
And I could go on and on and on about it, but if we're talking about social stuff, which I think is kind of what you guys delve into primarily, I got to shout out my buddy Louis Vangel over at Vangel's. Mm-hmm. Ironically, he opened the restaurant shortly before we opened 2.0 training systems, mm-hmm. and it's right around the corner. It's not far off either.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. I'm sure a lot of your listeners have been to Charlie Gito's. Mm-hmm. It's basically Charlie Gito's. Louis used to run Charlie Gito's. Charlie was his grandfather. Mm-hmm. So it is, despite being new, there is a lot of like St. Louis history kind of ingrained into what they're doing, and the food is amazing and the mm-hmm. atmosphere is really great and mm-hmm. very central location. So I definitely wanted to shout them out and use Vangel's as mm-hmm. as one of the examples of places that I like to engage with in St. Louis for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, dude, appreciate you for making the time, dude.
Yeah, of course. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming out, man. Thanks.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll see you guys next week.
Today, they rep St. Louis, yeah. They rep St. Louis. They rep St. Louis.